you can go kick rocks. I'ma stack bricks up, build what I want to make. Yeah, I'ma do it my way.
Yo, it's the Sandwich Generation with my girl Mitch. Relationships, kids, Asian parents, work, what the fuck?
Yeah, I'ma do it my way.
The Sandwich Generation. Now, here's Mitch.
Hey, what's up, what's up, what's up? Or what's not up? It's been kind of rough. Happy New Year, happy life, happy everything. If you're anything like me, balance is sometimes an interesting journey. I'm just trying to figure out how to keep life balanced. So we're going to get started with the first segment here, which is about child rearing. I like to call this segment The Race to 18. And today we're just going to be dealing with some acronyms and vocabulary words. You know, need the words, the deets to be able to navigate this here journey. So let's get started. I've already explained that I'm raising a child who's currently 15 and he deals with ODD, which is oppositional defiance disorder. And I explained previously understanding and getting to the awareness that what he's first in opposition to is himself, then in opposition to authority. And so I have really been on an interesting journey with mothering him specifically. He's taught me a lot about understanding how people work, respecting people for how they are and who they are, and allowing people to be who they are. I remember once we were at, there was a therapy session, a group therapy session, and I remember he had been asked a question and he didn't want to respond. Or I can't even say he didn't want to respond. He was just taking his time. Sometimes he's like that. And he's told me before that it's easier if it's a yes or no question. So when he shared that with me, it made things so much easier. When he's dysregulated, a lot of times I'll be like, okay, just give me a raise up one finger if it's yes or two fingers if it's no. That happened once when we had a really, really bad argument. And that worked really well, that particular system. So he actually, I would consider extremely high functioning. But still, he doesn't have a lot of confidence in his way and the way that he does things. So there's ODD, which is oppositional defiance disorder. There's an acronym. Then he deals with another acronym, which is ADHD. I'm not quite sure why they've lumped everything into attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, because I don't see the hyperactivity in him so much anymore. There used to be a hyperactivity, but it's not there anymore. And he's kind of turned inward. I've talked about this on a previous podcast. I kind of feel like he's a rose withering on the vine in the confines of this school system that we currently have. It's very, very depressing. There's not a lot of room for critical thinking, which there should be. And even though we're in the year 2024, there's still a lot of do it my way. This is the prescribed notion. One of my coworkers this week, wow, it was just like kind of like, you know, she was saying that, you know, when she teaches, she kind of says, just ignore your intuition. Just listen to me and do it the way I'm telling you to do it. And I promise you, I got nauseous. That made my stomach turn, because women and children are always told to ignore our intuition. And that's the strongest thing that we have. And I really do honor and respect his intuition, not within the confines of his diagnoses, but just within the confines of who he is as a person. So there's that side of things. And then there's IEP, which is Individualized Education Plan. And I believe I've explained before that you can schedule an IEP meeting anywhere within the school year. You don't have to wait until your annual date. You can, you know, just say that you want a meeting for your child. So that's dealing with a child with, I guess you would say, special needs. I'm really grateful that he is at a stage where I can think about, you know, moving him into some areas of more independence. Recently taught him how to ride the bus because I do believe that is that's a life skill that he needs to have. So along with this child rearing section is the section of divorce. I never wanted my children to be victims of divorce. And I believe that's probably why I hung on in my marriage a lot longer than I believe I should have. But it's challenging for me being the mother of a teen son, because already communication is going to be limited just because of the dynamics of the relationship. But I never really know how he feels about the divorce, how he feels about my part in it, how he feels about his dad's part in it. So there were some terms also pertaining to the divorce that I'll get into in the next segment. There's so much that you have to navigate and that you have to be aware of while you're going through a divorce, that it becomes challenging to pick up the slack for your kids as well, especially if they're older. I'll just speak for myself. Sometimes Sometimes I know that he's self-sufficient and I allow him his alone time, which with the kind of person that he is, notice I don't say with his diagnoses or because he has ADHD or because he has ODD. I believe that these are things that we deal with. They don't make up or comprise who we are as people. So knowing who he is as a person, I know that he likes his alone time. He will stay in the room, you know, pretty much the entire weekend that I have him, unless I kind of force him out. So I have had to really make sure that I carve out time for he and I, whether it's taking him out to a movie, asking him, you know, what it is it that you want to do this week. But I do want to share something kind of interesting that happened quite a while ago. In terms of not wanting him to be a homebody, I had one of my cousins that wanted to go out of town. I had said, sure, that'd be great. I did the black mama thing, like, he don't need to know. It don't matter if he knows. He need to get out of the house. He can't be just staying up in the house all the time. You know, so I kind of arranged this trip without consulting him and just figured that, you know, with the kind of person he is, I wanted him to learn some new tools of being in a place where maybe, you know, he's not comfortable understanding that he can survive it, because I don't want him to be a victim to his diagnoses. I want him to see them as ways of navigating his life, not ways of controlling him as a person. So I started off with the best of intentions, packed him up, told him we're going for the weekend. I could clearly see that he was becoming dysregulated. You know, and in my mind, I call that this black mothering mentality. You're just going to do what I tell you to do, and you're going to survive it, and you're going to be fine. So I don't know what that is. I really don't know what that is all about. I don't know why I have this propensity or this ideology of who a black mother is or how she should act or what she should do. So he did. He packed up a little bit of clothes. It was quite a distance that we ended up going. And I failed to tell him that he would be expected to go to a basketball game. Well, that ended up disastrous. My cousin told him to put on his shoes. He refused. I told him to put on his shoes. He refused. I saw he was on his phone, which is an appendage for, you know, some people that deal with these types of issues. It's like an attachment to their body, you know, their cell phone. So I see he's on his phone. I reach for his phone. I grab it. He increases his grip on it, and it becomes a tug of war. I'm like, oh, my God. So literally, like, my ego is not letting me let go of this phone. Like, nope, this is not going to happen. You're going to do it my way. It's like it says in my intro, you're going to do it my way. It's going to be my way or the highway. And so there was this tug of war for the phone. It went on for so long. My cousin was like, well, can we just leave? Is it okay if you, she had to ask her cousin because I was staying at her cousin's house. Is it okay if they just stay here? We got approval for that. And I told him, let go of this phone. I need you to talk to me. And so he was already dysregulated. So at this rate, I'm fishing for information, trying to figure out what in the world is going on. And I end up coming across the understanding that he actually has social anxiety. And it's so sad that I almost have to diagnose my son himself. I mean, myself, because he has always been what I call therapy averse. He's always been averse to therapy. I can take him, but there's just going to be a stare down between him and the therapist. So what's the point? It's not beneficial for him. It's not beneficial for me. It's not beneficial for anybody. So throughout the process of this, I'm finding out, okay, he's dealing with a pretty big social anxiety situation where he's almost afraid of large crowds. And it was kind of like certain areas of his life flashed before my eyes, like, oh, well, that's why he preferred to stay at the other school he was at. I even asked him, like, in your passing period, what do you do? Because that's like a lot of people and a new environment. And he said he just kind of holds on. And I'm telling you, my heart really broke for him in that situation. So one of the things I grew to understand, and I think will be beneficial for parents of any age, you really need to understand who your child is as a person. I believe gone are the days of, if you have more than one child, rearing them all the same. I can see from my children, from when they were born, I could tell certain things about their personality, their disposition, things that they could or could not tolerate. And I believe that in the end, it all comes down to respecting one another as human beings. So as we are thinking about how we're rearing our children, we really need to think about who they are as humans, what their needs are, and what they're trying to communicate to us. Often they're trying to communicate certain things to us that if we're dysregulated, of course we can't help to regulate them. So coming up, we're going to be talking a little bit more about self-care, some of the divorce vocabulary words, some of the self-care vocabulary words. We're getting into this, the meat of the situation, the segment where we're really trying to figure out how to keep ourselves together. Looking forward to it.
Let's go. I need a change in my life, cause I don't feel alive, and there's nothing that makes me happy. Oh.
And we all got dreams, we all want things, but what you gonna do for it? How you gonna move for it? What you gonna be?
And we're back. I just want to say I'm recovering from a horrible sinus infection. Y'all stay safe out there. They are, oh my goodness. It's always horrendous when I get a sinus infection because I'm one of those where my eye just drains and drains and it looks like I'm crying. People are asking me, what's wrong, sis? What's going on? What happened to you? And I'm just like, just a sinus infection, just a sinus infection. But I was really glad that I was proactive with it. I took Friday off, and then the following Monday was a holiday. And I really did have a chance to recover, build my energy up. So this segment is about self-care and making sure that we're taking care of ourselves, managing the different elements of child rearing and also taking care of the elders. But in the middle is you. You fit in there somewhere as well. And you need to tend to yourself and you need to take care of yourself. So one of the things, I'm not sure if some of you know, and don't take this as medical information, but what I was told was when you take Sudafed or something like that, you really need to take it at the first sign and you need to continue taking it. I think it was for 3 or 4 days. Or however long it's prescribed for. And that almost started sounding like antibiotics to me. Like antibiotics, you have to take them and take the whole thing or you're at risk of everything starting up all over again. So I did that. I got some really good rest. I tightened up my spiritual practices and also continued cleaning and organizing my home, my living space. So I believe I said once before, I'm not a hoarder, I'm hoarderish. So I'm in a complete purge phase. This entire year of 2024 might be a purge phase. And that's reminding me, I think I saw something called Swedish death cleaning. Hopefully I got that right. Where basically you are clearing out your space with the intention and realization that you are not going to be here any longer to tend to your things. And that's a legacy that you're leaving for the future generation. I can already say for myself, I'm still managing some of my grandmother's things. And she passed away almost 20 years ago. When my mother passes, I'm really afraid of, you know, she, I believe I said as well before, she had a 2-bedroom apartment. And when I got a storage facility for her, it was the size of a 6-bedroom house. It was meant to store things from a 6-bedroom house. And so even though she has not passed yet, I still need to figure out how to manage all of these things. How am I going to manage? Because her things are in another state. It's not realistic for me to think of bringing all of those things here to the state where I am. And I even looked at the cost of it. I think it was $12,000. The sum of all of those things is not even $12,000. So what we get down to is mementos and keepsakes. So I'm thinking about that for, you know, my kids. I don't want them to be left with the legacy. But it's so hilarious because my kids probably just throw all that shit away. They'll be like, what the fuck? I don't know what this fucking shit is. I do not have time for this fucking shit. If it's not something that's going to give me money or fucking maybe some pictures of when I was a kid, you know, I'm probably thinking about all this stuff and they don't care. So I really need to pare down to what is most important. So, yeah. So speaking of self-care, I have been very open about therapy, medication. If I need it, I get it. If I need it, I take it. Currently, I'm not in therapy, but it's like almost a graduation from therapy, and it's called DBT. There's an acronym for you. and vocabulary word is dialectical behavioral therapy. And with this, what you're doing, you're thinking about, I really don't know why they call it dialectical behavioral therapy. Like, that's so weird. But it focuses on mindfulness, interpersonal relationships, emotion regulation, you know, those types of things. And what I think, why I think it's called dialectical behavioral is that I think it focuses on your inner talk, your inner speak, what you're saying to yourself, how you're managing situations. And so I meet for that once a month. It's about, not once a month, once a week, sorry. It's about 2 hours each session. And I really take a deep dive into not being a victim anymore. You know, we really need to think about unvictimizing ourselves because a lot of times what talk therapy, which is generally what you get when you go to therapists, talk therapy, I feel, can really baby you sometimes. And I feel like we get caught up in this venting cycle because we don't feel heard. We don't feel like anyone is taking us seriously. Like anyone feels like what we're saying is of any import. So we just keep saying it over and over again. Sometimes we keep saying it again and again for attention. Sometimes we keep saying it again and again because, you know, we're so hurt and we want that to be mirrored back to us, that self-care, that love. But we can only do that for ourselves. So after a certain period of time, we have to get out of the venting cycle and think about a true solution to whatever our problems are, including if that means not continually telling the story. So that's what comes up in our class is, you know, stay out of the story. Don't stay stuck in the story. You know, what happened? Which skill did you apply? And what was the outcome? Like, this is the fucking graduation from goddamn therapy. Like, we're not fucking sitting here babying you. You know, these are the skills. And so these skills that I'm learning help me with dealing with my son. They help me with dealing with my ex. They help me with dealing with my mom and my catty coworkers. It's very interesting because after doing this dialectical behavioral therapy and some spiritual work on myself, balancing my spirit, loving myself, having my higher self look down on myself with love. It's like the energies at my job have completely balanced. Like, them fucking bitches don't be messing with me. They don't even mess with me. They ain't got time for me and I ain't got time for them. And so one of the things I've learned is just the value of my own bubbly spirit. Like, why would I let somebody else shut me down and turn me into somebody that I'm not? And so I had a very interesting awareness in another group that I go to on that same night, which is called Divorce Care. And even though Divorce Care applies a lot of strongly Christian tactics, I'm not religious so much anymore. I'm much more spiritual. I was able to come across a very important awareness, which is, it's so interesting that when my ex comes at me and comes for me, he involves the child or the children. And when he involves my minor child, I get so angry. One of the things I've realized with DBT and divorce care, a wonderful thing about myself is I usually don't get angry. I'm not a person that's prone to anger. Usually what I get is hurt by other people's actions. So that's a powerful self-awareness. But when I get angry, it's when I can see that my minor child is being manipulated. And so then somehow that anger morphs into me developing suicidal ideation and thinking about no longer being here. Now, if you guys have been here before, I speak very freely about suicidal ideation. I believe there needs to be a forum to discuss it. These are things that our kids are thinking about and our elders are thinking about. We need to be settled in this area to be able to have a conversation here. When you are to be concerned about a person talking about suicidal ideation is when they say they have a plan. You need to call a mental health professional. You need to contact 988. We are not, the song 911 is a joke. We're not calling 911 anymore because they will kill people, or it has happened. I don't know what you want to say about that. Not the best choice to call 911. So I don't have a plan, but I feel like I can discuss this. So I started wondering, why is it that when I get angry, then I see my child becoming dysregulated because of what my ex is doing? Why do I start developing suicidal ideation? I'm like, I'm a bubble of light and joy and freeness and fun. Why, again, like I said in the previous segment, why would I let somebody make me somebody that I'm not? Why would I turn into somebody or something that I'm not? And so I just started thinking, I really need to pay attention to the triggers, the markers, the identifying factors that I'm starting to go into this suicidal ideation thought process. And when I start going there, what I need to remember is just exactly what I just said. I am bubbliness, lightness, joy. I'm a little butterfly of love going around granting wishes of peace and harmony to everybody I meet and see. So why would I let the nefarious actions, thought processes of somebody else affect me and negatively impact me? So I am really realizing that I need to really ground myself in my spiritual practices. I really need to ground myself in more light and fun activities. Like, I love to dance. I love to paint. I need to just take those things out and not have a direction or a plan. Just turn on the music and dance. Just take out the paints and see what happens. It doesn't have to have an end goal. These are the things that we need to think about that are actually mitigating all of these fear-based reactions that we have sometimes that are causing us to become people who we are not. And so, as I've mentioned, I have also found buckets to deal with certain things. Like, divorce care is my bucket to deal with whatever's going on with my divorce. And DBT is my bucket to deal with my emotions. So one of the things I want to talk about, I have a few minutes to talk about this, which is concerning the divorce, a couple of other vocabulary words. So one of the things that I ended up going through was called discovery. So regarding divorce, a couple of the vocabulary words that you might want to think about are discovery. Discovery is fucking hell. They give you with boxes of documentation of what different accounts your ex may have opened, and you have to agree or disagree with the information, that your name is not attached to it, and that those bills belong to them. And then another vocabulary word is actuarial, which is where they have to determine whether or not your retirement, how much of your retirement is going to be included in the divorce. So yeah, you just need to keep yourself up on what's going on. Need to keep yourself aware of all of these terms, and know how to protect yourself, how to get through it. But definitely the most important thing is self-love and self-care. I'm not sure what that means to you. That might mean taking a bath. It might mean going to therapy. It might mean finding a legal person to help you out. We'll be back. All right, we're back. and let the fucking bullshit begin. You thought you had some letters to deal with before. I'm gonna get into it right now. So what the fuck is a SNF? When you deal with caretaking for your elder, your mom, your dad, they might say, well, yeah, we're going to put them in a SNF. A SNF is a skilled nursing facility. And, you know, kind of reading and paraphrasing from United Healthcare website. It says on the surface, a skilled nursing facility in a nursing home might look very similar. Some care facilities actually operate as both. As if we needed a fucking added confusion, right? I'm sorry, they didn't say that on the website, but this is why I'm going over this with you, because it's so fucking confusing. Some care facilities actually operate as both, with a separate floor or section of a building devoted to each. Now, with that, of course, you wouldn't know if your loved one is in a skilled nursing or a SNF, or if they're in a nursing home. So you really have to ask some questions. The difference between a skilled nursing facility and a nursing home comes down to the care provided. Okay, so skilled nursing care is provided by trained, registered nurses. These are questions you can ask in a medical setting under a doctor's supervision. So those are kind of the three things you can look for. Are registered nurses on staff? Is this a more of a medical setting where you're going to see medication being dispensed, maybe sort of wound care type thing? It says it's basically the same level of nursing care you get in the hospital. So the place might look similar to a hospital. Okay, so it says patients may go from the hospital to a skilled nursing facility to continue recovering after an illness, injury, or surgery. In our case, usually there's a lot of illnesses and injury as, you know, a person gets older. So it could be any of those things. In addition to skilled nursing care, may include rehabilitative services, which, don't get it twisted, there's a whole nother place called a rehabilitation center where they actually stay. Okay. They actually stay there. I think they can stay there up to 100 days. So at a rehabilitation center, it looks very much like skilled nursing care, or this is where I get fucking confused. I don't know if a rehabilitation center is a skilled nursing care facility, but I do believe it is. So if you hear of a rehabilitation center, that's pretty much what you're referring to. Patients may go from the hospital to a skilled nursing facility to continue recovering after an illness, injury, or surgery. In addition to skilled nursing, care may include rehabilitative services from licensed physical, occupational, or speech therapists. And that is true. My mom is so funny. She says when she goes downstairs for PE, which is another acronym that you may or may not know, which means physical education, which kids get in school when they're in school. So she always calls it PE. So this is basically an opportunity to get them to stimulate their muscles, to see, you know, how they're progressing. And I do believe the skilled nursing facility only keeps them for a short amount of time. And they check to see what their needs are. So the person might end up being a one-person assist, which means they need one person to help them. A two-person assist, they need two people to help them. They might need 24 hours of care, or they might be deemed as independent. And again, these are loose terms. Look it up for yourself. I'm just telling you what the fuck I've had to deal with on my goddamn journey. Shit, this is fucking ridiculous. What is a nursing home level of care? Nursing home care is provided mostly by licensed practical nurses, and nurses' aides under the supervision of a registered nurse. So notice we didn't say anything about a doctor. Care is focused on activities of daily living. That's what I was trying to figure out what that is. So activities of daily living, they actually have a scale that they use to determine when you get dismissed from a SNF or rehabilitation center. So the activities of daily living include but are not limited to dressing, bathing, eating. This is often called custodial care. People sometimes move to a nursing home when they are unable to take care of themselves due to medical, cognitive, behavioral, or functional issues. Interesting, it doesn't say aging. In addition to custodial care, nursing home residents may get help taking medications or managing chronic conditions. A nursing home provides long-term residential care. The goal is to provide a safe, comfortable, and caring environment for people who are unable to live independently. So notice nursing home ends up being a place where they live, okay? SNF, a skilled nursing facility, you're only there for a short amount of time. And there are differences concerning Medicare and Medi-Cal, which in other countries, states, is called Medicaid. It's a whole lot of fucking shit is what you need to know. Shit. It's like, you need to be teaching me this in high school so I know how to deal with this when I am taking care of my elderly parent years later. And we also don't stop to think there are some kids that are being raised by their grandparents and they don't know what the fuck to do. I mean, shit, nobody even discusses this shit. Okay, so it says, let's see. This is the key differences between home health care, assisted living, and nursing homes. The purpose of assisted living, home care, and nursing homes is to ensure that seniors are happy, safe, and healthy. Well, no fuck. They enable seniors to make the most of their day through what is referred to as activities of daily living. There's another acronym for you. I said it before, but the acronym is ADL. Here are some key similarities between all three services. A safe environment, special nutrition, life enrichment, management of daily medication, general support. This is where the similarities between home health care, assisted living, and nursing homes end. Let's explore the different elderly options so that you can make the best choice. Okay. Home health aid for the elderly in their own homes. Most senior citizens would prefer to continue living in their own homes independently. And just so you know, that can be an expensive option. It doesn't necessarily end up having to be. But if you need to consider a nursing home for your loved one, you know, you need to know that they are going to be with people that can care for them much better than you can. So we need to drop the guilt, people. We need to fucking drop the guilt. This shit is real. Your elderly mother or uncle may require special health care, but that doesn't... got a little lost there. But that doesn't mean that they should be forced to leave their homes. So even the wording here, forced to leave their homes. We're not forcing them to leave their homes. We're trying to figure out what the best option is for them. So it says that you can get a home health aid for them to stay in their own home. It can cost between $120 and $240 a day, just so you know. And what is an assisted living facility? I want to make sure. This is from bizinsure.com. BIZINSURE.com. So I kind of flipped the script on you guys and changed to a different source. Okay, so each assisted living community is unique. There are its activities and benefits. They range from $2,500 to $6,000 a month. Okay, so I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know of any assisted living at $2,500. Most are at clearly $5,000. So I will be talking in the future about the assisted living waiver program here in California. I don't know what there is in other states. And also, I will be talking in the future about Miller's Law or something in terms of structuring your funds in such a way that it's not counting towards Medi-Cal. So on average, nursing homes cost about $225 a day or $6,844 per month. This shit is so fucking expensive. I don't know how, I don't even know I don't know what they're expecting us to do. And then nursing homes, the cost is $3,600 to $6,844 a month. And then is it that's not a fuck enough? Then you got the difference between a room and board and a board and care. So many individuals have plans to purchase a second home and to run a facility that houses individuals who need housing. So this is, we're talking about the difference, okay? So basically, just so you know, these are just average people like you and me running these homes. There are two types of businesses you can do. There are board and care facilities, and then there are homes that offer just room and board. Okay, so just room and board means they're just feeding you and giving you a place to stay. But they're not doing any wound care. They're not administering your medications. It's basically like you're renting a room, basically. Okay, board and care facilities are homes that are, here's another fucking acronym for you, RCFE, Residential Care Facilities for the Elderly. These facilities are licensed by the state. The state will need to come out to do an inspection that will instruct you on what modifications like railings, ramps, bars that need to be cleared. These facilities range from high functioning to extreme cases of dementia or severely handicapped. State law allows in most home, depending on the zoning, but mostly two people to a room. If a room has a lot of unused square footage and there's reasonable areas to put more people, you can file for a high occupancy permit. High occupancy permits cost $9,000. So this is to the people that are opening them. It also takes about 7 to 8 months for them to come out, inspect, and approve. So you have to crunch the numbers and figure out if that's your situation. This is written for people that are trying to open this type of facility. And this was from Lease Options of Cal. So just so you know, it's a whole lot of fucking shit to think about. Honestly, if you happen upon this podcast and you are not in a situation where you're caring for an elderly person, you better fucking get your ass ready to, because this is some fucking bullshit. Like, I'm still lost. I'm sitting here reading this to you, and I feel like I'm a deer in the headlights because it's so much that you have to navigate and figure out and tend to. So in the future, I will be talking about California's assisted living waiver program, and I will be talking about Medi-Cal. And I will be talking about maybe some ways that you can start planning for this. And I also want to really think about the fact that just because there's an elderly person involved doesn't mean that there's a middle-aged person caring for them. There are a great deal of children in this country that are being raised by their grandparents, and that's fucking it. They don't have any cousins. They don't have anybody. And if they're not teenagers, there are young adults that are being raised by the elderly. We need to think about educating people so that they are aware and not bewildered in dealing with these situations. So you also need to think about terms like ombudsman. If you are in a skilled nursing facility, you might need an ombudsman in order to mediate your affairs between yourself and wherever your loved one is staying. So that was a whole fucking lot. I hope you took notes. And if you didn't, I hope you play it back. Get your damn self together. It's a lot. But honestly, this is why, like I was saying, spiritual practices are so important. Tying these three elements of life together and making sure that we do what we can to take care of ourselves first. We have to remember, just like they say on a plane, you got to put the mask on yourself first. Not because it's rude, but because if you don't have fucking oxygen to your brain, you can't help anybody else. If you don't take care of yourself first, you can't take care of anyone else. So I'm really looking forward to future segments, and reach out to us if you've got ideas. We'll see you next time.